Pastimes from the fifth canto, and this is the Srishti Vastu, the structure of the universe, which Srila Vyasadeva explained one day to Parikshit Maharaj. There is no limit to the extent of Sri Krishna's material energy. Even someone who possesses billions of years of life like Lord Brahma can never understand or explain the extent of this universe perfectly. Of course, it's not possible to explain the universe with perfect accuracy, but I shall try to explain to you the principal regions of Bhuloka. This verse is very significant. Sukadeva Goswami is saying that it's not possible to describe the universe with perfect accuracy. It's not possible to describe this material universe with perfect accuracy. But I shall try to explain to you the principal regions, such as Bhuloka. So here in this verse, Sukadeva is letting us know that he's not an expert in astronomy or maybe, but he's humbly admitting that I don't know how accurate, it's very difficult to accurately describe all the different levels and layers and depths and expansions and contractions of the various universes. So this is a statutory warning before I prefacing my description. Surgeon General's warning that I'm going to describe to you a very summary overview of the whole universe just to give some idea of it. So don't take it as gospel truth. It's not, there may be some slight details not correct, which maybe don't gel with the modern scientific observation or thought or conclusions, although they're always changing. But here Sukadeva is warning all the future scientists and critics who critically and enviously examine the Bhagavatam and say, "Ah, look here, in the fifth canto it's saying that the moon is further away from the Earth's planet than the sun. These calculations are wrong. See, we've proven by modern science, therefore the Bhagavatam is bogus." They try to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You give the baby a snan, and then the water that washes from his body is all full of oil and dirt and grime. So naturally that goes down the drain, and the baby is rinsed off with fresh water and dried and spanking fresh and new, clean, squeaky clean. But if someone throws out the dirty water after his bath, plus throws out the baby, that's a ridiculous and foolish action. If someone simply examines a brief description of the fifth canto, and on the basis of this very summary and admittedly imperfect description of this impossible to describe universe, and if somebody sees Sukadeva Goswami's attempt, noble that it is, and then rejects it, "Oh, this doesn't match modern science and astronomy and all these astrophysics and all these subjects. Therefore, we reject the whole Bhagavatam. It's mythology. It's unreal. It's fairy tales. It's make-believe. And this religion that's based, this Bhagavad Dharma that's based on the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam is also fairy tale and make-believe and mythology and no relevance. And there's no scientific basis or foundation of this Bhagavad Dharma. So let's reject it all and simply worship science. Science is the Dharma, and scientists are the god, the modern gods. They've replaced scientists and physicists and Nobel laureates. They've replaced Bhagavan, Maheshwara, and Parameshwara, and Parambhukta, and they're the supreme controllers and enjoyers and creators. That's what they want everyone to believe, and most people do. But the Bhagavatam is not meant to be a book of astronomy. It's meant to be a book of liberation. The status quo, the moksha, the ultimate liberation, prema pumartha mahan, be liberated from misery, birth and death, attain pure love of God, realize your siddhartha, leave all this imperfect, inaccurate material world behind, all the quarks and black holes and unlimited galaxies and complexities of this material universe, leave it all behind and go to the sweet land of Brajadham. Play with Krishna, eat with Krishna, dance with Krishna, kiss Krishna, be with Krishna, serve Krishna, love Krishna forever in a blissful spiritual body. Because the Bhagavatam is a rasa granth. After writing so many Vedic literatures and compiling so many Vedic literatures, Vyasadeva was not satisfied, because without rasa, a life without love is not worth living. A life without rasa has no taste. So he didn't have any rasa in the Puranas and the histories. So he, Narada Muni went back and said, fill it with life. Fill the Puranas with life. Fill them with taste. Fill them with rasa. Fill them with Braja Prem. What are the rasa exchanges of the gopis and Krishna, and the gopas and Krishna, and the servants, house servants and Krishna? So this is all brought out in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam so perfectly and so beautifully by Sukadeva Goswami. So if one wants love, if one wants bliss, enjoyment, pleasure, rasa, and liberation, eternal life in the land of bliss and love, then Bhagavatam is for him. It is the perfect scripture, Amala Gyanam, Amala Puranam, Paramahamsa Samhitam. If he studies Bhagavatam and surrenders to Bhagavatam and realizes the teachings of Bhagavatam, becomes Bhagavatatmika, one with the bhavas, Bhagavat Bhavatamatmika, one with the moods and mellows of the Bhagavatam, then he will attain perfection in one life, one short span of 50, 40, 50 years, make his human life perfect and go back to Godhead. So we'll read some summary of the summary of this fifth canto, Structure of the Universe. I get some idea that it's really vast and it's really a lot of variety out there. Amazing places, amazing sights, amazing planets. And it's all part of the Adbhuta Shakti of Krishna, the Adbhuta Chamatkar, Adbhuta power, Adbhuta Shakti of Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Vishnu, Bhagavan Narayan. So great, so wonderful, so grand, so powerful, so creative, so artistic, so beautiful, so charming, so sweet. This is the Lord that we adore. So hear about that. Lord Brahma also addresses this idea to understand the whole universe with our limited intelligence in his famous Stuti, Brahma Stuti, 14th chapter of the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, verse 3, which Ramananda Roy also includes in his Ramananda Sambhag, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 8, verse 67. Gyane prayasamuda pasyana manta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiya vartam stane stita shutigatam tanavan manobir ye prayasha jita jitop Yasitaistralokyam. Hatefully giving up all intellectual attempts. Udapasya. Gyane prayas. Gyan prayas. The immediate endeavors, the feverish attempts and passionate investigation. Gyane prayasam. The passionate investigation for knowledge, mundane material knowledge. Udapasya, just give it up, give it up. Discard it resolutely and absolutely and completely. Hatefully giving up all intellectual attempts. Gyane prayasam udapasya. To understand the supreme truth, They who want to realize Bhagavan Sri Krishna and understand the Supreme Absolute Truth should completely surrender themselves to Bhagavan Sri Krishna. They should hear from self-realized devotees about Sri Krishna's holy name and transcendental pastimes. Whatever situation a person may find himself in the material world, he should progress positively and steadily on the spiritual path. How? By fully dedicating his mind, body, and words to Bhagavan Sri Krishna. In this way, the infinite, who is never conquered by anyone, especially a finite jiva, can become easily conquered by love. And Jiva Goswami, in his Tika on this Bhagavatam, he says that if someone simply tries to understand the external aspect of God, the vibhutis, the powers, the majesty, the grandeur, the srishti, the creation, srishti palaya, and creation and destruction, and only fixes his mind and intellectual pursuit on the knowledge of Bhagavat Tattva, then that will prevent him from access to the natural prema of Braj, the free flow of intimate exchanges on the platform of pure love, which represents Braja and all the Brajvasis. Because in this Braja praying, there is not even a scent, not even a fragrance or a scent of reverence, respect, awe, majesty, based on social conventions and restrictions. Bhagavan Sri Krishna can never be conquered by anyone, no matter how many computer heads he has. Lord Brahma has, or at least in our universe, Lord Brahma has four heads, four big computers, and he admits that I can't do it. I've given up. So we have our one tiny head, human head, and so many computer heads tacked onto it, lined up in our laboratories and offices and scientific research centers. But with all our computer heads and physical head and cranium, we can never conquer Bhagavan Sri Krishna. But that same Krishna can be conquered by one who simply hears Bhagavan's Lila Katha from the mouth of an advanced pure devotee of the Lord. By hearing such topics about Bhagavan and Vrindavan, those sweet Madhurya Katha, and they can tie up Krishna in their hearts with the ropes of love. So let's get on with the summary. Bhagavad Leela, Bhagavad pastimes. The structure of the universe is quite detailed, lots of numbers, lots of extraordinary scenes and descriptions. Try to see them, try to remember them and appreciate it. It's all what makes Krishna reality, the beautiful. This Bhumandal resembles the shape of a lotus flower. The seven islands resemble its whirl, and in the middle of that flower is Jambudvip, which is round like a lotus leaf and is 800,000 miles in diameter. And this Jambudvip, this island of Jambu, there are nine divisions called Varshas, and each has a length of 9,000 times 8, 72,000 miles. In the center of Jambudvip is Ilavrita Varsha, the division. And within Ilavrita Varsha is Mount Sumeru. Mount Sumeru is interesting. It's made of solid gold. It is the center of the lotus-shaped Bhumandala planetary system, and it is the support of this universe. Mount Sumeru is 800,000 miles tall. That's quite good. And there's mountain ranges marking these eight divisions of Jambudvip. And there's lots of... let's get back to Mount Sumeru and describe this a little bit. In the Mount Meru, there are on each four sides, north, south, east, and west, there are four mountains. So there's Mount Meru in the middle, then it's surrounded by four smaller mountains. Mount Meru is 800,000 miles high. And on one side, there's Mandara, Meru Mandara, Suparshva, and Kumuda Parvat, or mountains. These are small mountains. These mountains are only 80,000 miles high. And at the top of each of these four mountains, Mandara, Meru Mandara, Suparshva, and Kumuda, there is a tree which is 8,000 miles high, and that stands like a flagstaff on top of each of these four mountains. Now let's discuss each of these four mountains. Mandara, Meru Mandara, Suparshva, and Kumuda, which are surrounding that super tall Mount Sumeru. Mount Sumeru is 10 times taller than these four mountains surrounding it. Mount Meru is 800,000 miles, and these are only little ones, 80,000 miles. So on the top of one of those mountains, Mandara, there's a huge mango tree who has fruits as big as mountain peaks. That's quite enough. That'll last you for a whole year, I suppose. Lots of mango shakes. And when these big, huge mountain-size fruits of mango fall off the tree, they break, and there's so much juice inside these mountains that it rushes down the side of Mount Mandara like waterfalls of mango juice. The wives of the Yakshas, who are maidservants of Shiva's wife Parvati, they drink that mango water, and consequently their bodies smell like mangoes. They're very fragrant. For 80 miles in all directions, their bodies are emitting a very sweet, fruity fragrance. The other of the four mountains surrounding Mount Sumeru is Meru Mandara. And on this one, that big tree that's like a flagstaff, remember, each one has a big tall tree on top of it. 8,000 mile high tree. This is a jambu tree. And the fruits are as big as elephants. And when they fall, it forms rivers called the Jambu Nadi, which Nadi means river. And when the mud, or when the dirt on the banks of that river becomes moistened by the jambu fruit juice, and it dries in the air and combines with the sun rays, it produces gold. So the banks of this river of jambu juice flowing down Meru Mandara Mountain are just solid gold. And many Swarga Devis and their husbands, they collect this gold and they make all kinds of ornaments. That's practical. On a third mountain surrounding Mount Sumeru, it's called Suparshva, and there's a Mahakadamba tree, and five rivers of honey, Kadamba honey, are flowing from this tree, and each river of honey is 40 feet wide. Now that's quite a flow of honey. 40 feet is 16 meters. 16 meter wide river of Kadamba honey. It's very herbal type of sweet fragrance. And there's five of them flowing from this Maha Kadamba Briksha on the top of Suparshva Mountain, which surrounds Mount Sumeru. Now, the fourth of the four mountains surrounding Mount Sumeru is Kumud. And on top of this mountain, like a great flagstaff, there's a banyan tree called Shatavalsa. And there's all kinds of rivers flowing from its roots and satisfying all the various living entities with the necessities of life. Between these four mountains surrounding Mount Sumeru in the middle, so between each of these four mountains, there are four huge lakes. And each lake is filled with different substances, or at least it's told. There's water in each of these four lakes between these four mountains surrounding Mount Sumeru. But the water in one of these four lakes tastes like milk. And that's cow's milk. And the water in another lake tastes like honey. And the water in another lake tastes like gunaras, sugarcane juice. And one tastes like water, which is practical, pure water. And then these four lakes surrounding the four mountains, surrounding the one Mount Sumeru, there's four gardens there. It's a very appropriate place. You have a beautiful lake, and surrounding the lake there's a garden, just like Radhakund. There's like a lake, Sarovar, and there's so many beautiful gardens of the Sakis and Kunjas surrounding Radhakund and Shyamakund. There's Nandanandan garden, or bagicha, Chitrarata, Vibrajaka, and Sarvatabhadra. All the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, and various celestial beings, they play in these four lakes, and they enjoy. They enjoy in the rivers there, and the people that live on this particular island of Ilavrita Varsha, they're beautiful, and their bodies are described. Certainly everyone on earth is endeavoring to have a body like that, but unfortunately we don't. So their bodies are described, and people may get inspired to want to go to Ilavrita Varsha, that section over there, but we'll be happy to go to Goloka Vrindavan and get our Siddhadeya as a Mandri Kinkriya Vrata. They have no gray hair, so they don't have to worry about dyeing their hair. They have no wrinkled skin, so there's not much of a business there for plastic surgery and aloe vera gels and lotions. And they never feel fatigue, so no one has to drink coffee or tea there, nor take drugs or ginseng or shilajit. And they don't become afflicted by old age, diseases, or untimely death, akala mrityu. So there goes the whole hospital business and all the doctor business and all the old age retirement homes that are all non-existent over there. And their physical bodies do not lose their luster and effulgence as they get old, nor do they ever emit a bad odor due to perspiration, because they don't perspire. Or if they do, it smells like flowers. They don't suffer the miseries of extreme cold and heat, and as a result of all these benedictions and wonderful blessings, they live very happily without anxiety until they die, which, of course, may be a little bit anxious. And there are many smaller mountains besides these four biggies we describe. They're arranged around the base of Mount Meru, and they have names and sizes, etc. And we're just summarizing. At the top or the summit of Mount Meru is the abode of Lord Brahma called Shatakumbhi, because it's made of gold. Surrounding this abode of Brahma, which is often called Brahmapuri, in all directions, which means eight, north and south, east and west, northeast, southeast, northwest, southwest, in these eight directions surrounding Brahma's place, there are the residents of the eight Lokapalas. These are the principal governors of the eight directions or eight planetary systems. And they have their homes are about like Brahma's, but one-fourth the size, because they're small-timers. Now this section here describes about the Ganga. As everyone knows, Lord Vamanadeva extended his left foot to the very limits of the universe, poked through it with the nail of his big toe, and the causal ocean water there leaked through from the other side, the Paravyom side, and that became the river Ganga, which is tinged with a beautiful pinkish color due to having washed the reddish powder from the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadeva. And of course, I don't see that pink color when I go to Mayapur. It looks a little light green to me. But in proper consciousness, we can understand that it's actually a beautiful pinkish color. And after 1,000 yuga cycles, which is about 1,000, one yuga cycle is one Satya Treta Dwapara Kali, that's about, let's say, 4 million years. So 4 million times 1,000, 1,000, 4 million times 4 million. That's a lot of years. You can figure it out. 1,000 yuga cycles means after 1,000 times 4 million years, the water of the Ganga fell upon and descended upon Dhruva Loka. And ever since that time, Dhruva Maharaj and the Saptarishis, seven sages who live just below Dhruva Loka, have accepted this water upon their heads with great devotion. After purifying the planets of the seven rishis, which is often modernly called the Big Dipper, if you look in the sky, there's looks like a pressure cooker with a handle on it, which people call a dipper or a ladle or a dipper. Looks like four planets mark the four corners of a square pressure cooker, you could say, and then there's a handle going up in the sky, that's three other planets. That's called a Big Dipper. There's also a Little Dipper. I don't know what they are, who they are. But the Big Dipper represents that very brilliant, bright stars in the night. That's considered to be the Grahan, or the planetary abodes of the Saptarishis, the seven Manasaputras appearing from Brahma's mind, which includes maybe Atri and Umbrigu and etc. And then if you follow a line from there up to a more super brilliant star, which is a planet that's called the Pole Star, that's the planet of Dhruva Maharaj. So after purifying the planets of the Saptarishis, the Ganga is carried through space by various demigods in billions of celestial airplanes. So apparently this idea of water tankers carrying water here and there, it's been going on for millions of years. It's not so big in the West, I guess. I haven't been there in a while. But in India, especially in Vrindavan and North India, there are always trucks running all around the place and tractors carrying these big tankers full of water, these big, mostly it's tractors scurrying here and there down various lanes to facilitate people's life, sustain their life with life-giving water, or to construct some new apartment house. There's these water tankers taking water from the banks of the Yamuna or wherever and giving to those who don't have. So even the demigods, they were running a whole tanker business water transport business millions of years ago. Demigods started this tanker, this shipping company, with a whole fleet full of celestial airplanes, all equipped with, I guess, water tanker facility in the back, and they fill it up with water and drive it around the universe. So the Ganga, they dipped into, they were drawing water not from the Jamuna bank like in Vrindavan, but they were filling up their tanker trucks with Ganga Jal from the Suraduni Celestial Ganga and their airplanes. That's a pretty sophisticated water tanker. Here we just have tractors with a little trolley design like a tanker full of water. But there they have whole Pushpa Vimans or whatever this is, celestial airplanes. So this they carried all that Ganga, and then it finally reached the moon planet. And from there it went to the abode of Brahma on top of Mount Meru. And from the top of Mount Meru, the Ganga divides into four branches. So that's Ganga is flowing down Meru Mountain, which is 800,000 miles high. So that's quite a flow. And the name of the four branches flowing down the four sides... Oh, no, excuse me, that's Mount Meru. That's not Mount Sumeru. I guess it is. It's hard to say. There's Sumeru and Meru Mandara, so I don't know which mountain it is. I'm not clear. From the top of Mount Meru, the Ganga divides into four branches named Sita, Alakananda, Chakshu, and Vajra, which flow down in four directions to the ocean of salt water. Well, this is a very wonderful description about this these mountain regions and some basic structure of the universe. And we'll get into more discussion next Bhagavad Leela.